Cider Planet is the newest book out by Claude Jaleclair, our guest on this here episode 332. He's already written two books on the topic of cider, one in French and one in English, and this newest book covers the entire globe, or what he calls Cider Planet. Hey, 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 my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. Hip, hip, hooray! We'll be getting to our featured conversation with Claude Jaleclair, but first, a wee bit of news from out and about in Ciderville. All right, Ciderville, you got to get out your pen and paper or stop your computer right now, pull over to the side of the road, because I want you to know that the tickets for the Calvados and American Apple Brandy tasting are now live. You can find links to this tasting by going to iloveciderdays.com. iloveciderdays.com. Because I know you love Cider Days like I love Cider Days. Because if you've been listening to this podcast, well, even going back to 2015, I have been releasing a yearly episode titled Going to Cider Days with all these different tips and insights and the schedule of events that will be taking place during that weekend, which is always the first weekend of November. Now, you may be wondering, where does this Cider Days event that you talk of take place, Rhea? Well, allow me to oblige. It takes place in Western Massachusetts, and the events under the title Cider Days 2.0 are all taking place at Hawks and Reeds Performing Arts Center in downtown Greenfield, Massachusetts. It's fully accessible, and we're going to be having all our different events in the venue called The Perch, which is up on the fourth floor. It's this really cool scene, and there we will have our first event of the weekend, the American Apple Brandy and the Calvados tasting. Oh, four Calvados and two American Apple Brandies that are going to just knock your socks off, all paired with a charcuterie plate. And I want to thank two sponsors for that. One is Veroni, which is an Italian-based charcuterie company. They've been in business since the early 1920s. They're sending over charcuterie from Italy for that event. And Cabot. Cabot cheese based in Vermont. We have some Cabot cheese that we're going to be tasting too. All kind of pairing that up with this brandy tasting that's just going to be fantastic. It's going to be presented with myself and Ambrosia Borowski, a cider and brandy expert based in Chicago. Ambrosia is also the general manager of the Northman Beer and Cider Garden right in downtown Chicago. So, it's going to be such an amazing kickoff event. Make sure that you get your tickets now because they are on sale. These are the first tickets to go live on September 1st. Tickets for the Saturday workshops. We have John Bunker talking about orcharding for homeowners. So those are like 10 trees or less. And then we have Lisa Lair Dunn of Lairs & Company. That's one of the American Apple Brandies we're pouring on Friday night. Lisa is also presenting on Saturday morning a workshop on the history of Applejack. And of course, her family are the founders of Applejack in America. So that's going to be super cool. And I call it a workshop because there's going to be a tasting of three different brandies from Lairs and Company. That's a nice way to start Saturday. And then in the afternoon, from 2 to 4:30, there's going to be a cider pop-up in downtown Greenfield at the Pushkin, which is all part of Hawks and Reeds. But Pushkin is right across the street, and it's a big old bank, big old space, and we're going to have a cider pop-up there. So stay tuned for some of the events that are going to be happening in there. And then that evening, it's the return of the cider dinner, and there's going to be six women cider producers all on hand with their ciders. Six ciders paired with a five-course meal. So you walk in that evening, and the first thing that you get to have is the Lisa cocktail, which is, of course, made with a Lairs brandy. And then as the evening rolls on, you're going to have ciders from West County Cider Company. Judith Maloney will be there. You're going to see Eleanor Leger of Eden Specialty Cider, Nicole Bloom of Cars Cider House. They were just on the episode 331 last week. That's Cars Cider House. So if you want to hear from both Nicole and Jonathan, check that out. Louisa Spencer of Farnham Hill Cider and Poverty Lane Orchard in Lebanon, New Hampshire. I'm so stoked to have Louisa. She is just a force to be reckoned with. And Farnham Hill Ciders, oh, they're just crazy good. These are, you know, cider makers all based on the East Coast, New England. And then we also have Ann Garwood Hamp of Ragged Hill Cider. That's a cidery based out in West Brookfield, Massachusetts. So six women cider makers, five-course meal. Everything is gluten-free. It's going to be absolutely fabulous. What a way to hang out. Oh, and I should also mention there's a tap takeover on Friday night at the Wheelhouse, which is also part of Hawks and Reeds. That's just like some of the stuff going on. I'm just salivating thinking about it all. So again, I want to really make sure that you bookmark this page. ILoveCiderDays.com. That's going to bring you to a webpage that's under the Cider Chat umbrella, and you'll be able to find out about Cider Days 2.0, and you're going to be able to see the events for Cider Days 2.0 and also a schedule of events, not only for Cider Days 2.0, but the broader region of both Western Mass and, I want to say, the Berkshires, because there's stuff going on in the Berkshires too. You want to come up for the week and really like enjoy the Cider Week, get in the groove, get landed, and get your bearing to enjoy this return of Cider Days. And I sure hope to see you at Cider Days 2.0.
Walking through the orchards.
One of the reasons that Cider Days was founded originally was to get people into cider making. That's why I started teaching cider making way back then, and just kind of getting folks familiarized with the process. And one of the big things with cider making, for those in the know, is that yes, you need the apples and you also need yeast. Now, there's two different kinds of yeast, right? You could have the wild ambient yeast in your cellar, but a lot of makers, myself included, choose to use a cultured yeast. And when you do that, you're going to be able to direct the cider a bit towards where you'd like it to go in the glass. And the folks that are sponsors of this here podcast are all about that, and they are called Fermentis. They provide specific cider yeast for wherever your palate goes. So whether you want dry, sweet, or balanced cider, Fermentis is your ticket. You can find out more at fermentis.com, and they'll provide you with the whole list of different cider options to go with. In fact, coming up in September, you're going to be hearing an episode with Anne, who is a technical advisor at Fermentis. And we're going to be answering some of those questions that I asked back in spring about fermenting. Because this time of year, at least in North America, we are gearing up for cider making. And this is a time that you do want to be thinking about what direction you would like to bring that cider towards in the glass. And that's all about yeast, in addition to apples. So to make it easy for you, we're going to have that podcast episode to really bring you into some of the options that Fermentis has for all of us, and to really encourage you to go to the website, fermentis.com.
Smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Up next is our featured conversation with author Claude Jalicoeur. He already has two books out. The first one is in French, and that is titled Du Pommier au Cidre. And the second came out in 2013, titled The New Cider Maker's Handbook. Cider Planet is being released to the public on September 23rd, and you can pre-order your books now. There'll be a link in the show notes to this year, episode 332. In this conversation with Claude, we talk about the inspiration behind Cider Planet, who it was written for, and what readers can expect from the book. So without further ado, let's all grab a glass and join this chat with Claude Jalicoeur, author of Cider Planet. Claude, I'd like to welcome you to Cider Chat. It's such a pleasure to be able to have this opportunity to talk to you about your newest book, Cider Planet, which is coming out for September 2022. I understand that you're based up in Quebec. I know that your last book, The New Cider Maker's Handbook, which was released in 2013, you talked about that you had purchased land that encouraged you to get into cider making back in the 1980s, and that there were four rows of apple trees. So I wonder, how many apple trees do you now tend up in your home area of Quebec? And is there a larger orchard, or is it primarily that main abandoned orchard that you have brought back slowly over the years?
Well, the main production of apples still comes from that, from these old trees, but many of them have been grafted to other cider varieties. Originally, they were mainly Cortland apples and McIntosh. So many of these trees now produce some true bittersweet cider apples after having been top grafted. And there's also a number of newer trees that I have planted. But more recently, in 2014, I have bought another piece of land in the back of my first land. And I have up to now planted about 80 young trees up there. But these are not producing yet. They should start, I have maybe a basket of apples this year. And it will increase with time. So all those trees, there are about 80 of them. Each is a different variety. So this is really for testing varieties in this climate. And, eventually it will produce quite a bit of apples. Hopefully my daughter, who is getting into cider making, will be able to use them when I'm too old.
That's great news. I'm glad to hear that the legacy lives on. And we could see what you've been doing during this pause these past couple of years in terms of writing Cider Planet. What was your inspiration behind writing Cider Planet?
It really started quite soon after the New Cider Maker's Handbook was released. This book had quite a bit of success. And I started getting invitation to attend some conferences or to be judged in international competitions or to speak at different events in all sorts of cider regions of the world. So in the first years, I went to Spain, to Australia, and France also. And after that, I also went to other countries like Germany, England, and, well, the United States, naturally, also. So this has initiated quite a lot of traveling. And during those travels, I was able to meet quite a number of great cider makers. So I made interviews, I took notes, I took photos. And after a little while of this, I realized that I had gone most of the important cider-making regions of the world, that I had accumulated quite a lot of interesting material. And thus, it became sort of obvious to me that I had to make a book out of this to share with all the cider community so that everybody can profit from these experiences. So that's what really started it.
Are there any areas that you hope to venture out to, because at this point, you've really hitched on some major touchstone regions in the world in your travels. And of course, in the book, you were able to, you know, bring that to all of us. But is there an area that you're still kind of cider curious about?
A place where I haven't been and where I would still like to go?
Yes.
Well, maybe in New Zealand. There's probably Ireland. These are sort of two major places which I didn't lay a foot yet. The West Coast also, I'd like to go back on the West Coast, Oregon, Washington, British Columbia, and Canada. I know a little less of those areas. It would be nice to go, yes.
Okay, well, any listeners out there in Ciderville, now you're hearing that. If you want to bring Claude Jacquelet to your region, this is your invitation to do that. Why not, right? So in the book, there was a certain piece that I'd like to ask you to read, because I thought that this really encapsulated a little bit about what readers can expect from Cider Planet. And it's in the chapter on traditional cider making on page 48. And I really liked it because it's very relatable to me. It's something that I've experienced myself. And though I know it's talking about traditional cider making, I think it really lends itself to, in my interpretation, and I could be wrong, on what you're hoping that readers can expect from Cider Planet. Would you be willing to read that for us, and then we could talk a little bit about that little first paragraph on page 48?
Okay, so really in that paragraph, I'm talking about the traditional ciders of Europe, the four original cider-producing regions, which we may consider as the cradles of cider making, which are the southwest of England, which we often call the West Country. In France, we're talking about Brittany and Normandy. In Spain, we're talking about Asturias and the Basque Country. And in Germany, we're talking about Hesse region, where Frankfurt is the center of cider making in Germany. So what I write here is one thing that I find extraordinary with these ciders is how easy it is to recognize them once you have tasted a few samples. Even on a blind tasting with a cider from Herefordshire in England, Normandy in France, Asturias in Spain, and Hesse in Germany, just by a smell over the glass, one can fairly easily identify which is which. In fact, I find that the good cider of those countries has some teleportation properties. Closing my eyes while sipping the cider makes me travel instantly to that region. It's almost as efficient as a transporter in Star Trek.
And so true. I think what really hit to me on that particular paragraph is that you're traveling about and going to these different places around the world. I'm wondering if you're going to agree with this, and maybe it's just my experience. But once one has been in that region, has smelled the terroir of the land, met the people, walked on the soil, that's part of the transporter, you know, that teleportation that you get to that site that brings you there. And I'm also getting that's a sense of what you're bringing in this book here, Cider Planet, is having people be able to be transported through your writing to get a sense of the apple varieties, the cultures that, and the traditions of cider making that are happening from the past and being brought forward or have changed over time. Would that be a true interpretation, or do you see that a little bit differently?
No, I think you're quite pushing on the right button there. I like your way of seeing this. Naturally, the reader's perspective will always be a bit different from the writer's perspective, but I do enjoy your vision of this book and how you interpret it. I think it's pretty much what I wanted at the start.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty close.
Good, good. In my mind, one has to actually experience that, to not only just read it, but I hope that your book really encourages people to travel there. And
I hope so also. I really hope so.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're perfectly right that if you have... The first time I drank a Spanish cider, I had not been to Spain before. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was I was very surprised by the taste of it. And it's only after going to Spain that I could understand. And once you've been there and you've met the producers and everything, after that you come back home and the Spanish cider will taste totally different from the first bottle that you had before going.
Yeah, are you referring to that trip that you took with Steve Wood of Farnham Hill and Nicole Laban and Ben Watson?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was a great trip. Yes, it was really a great trip.
Yeah, I heard the same thing from Nicole speaking about Steve Wood, where it was like he couldn't believe that people were drinking that cider. And then after he kind of got comfortable in the culture there, he really enjoyed Sidra. So I think that that's very true. And it's nice that you're capturing that essence in your book, bringing us to all these different regions.
Yes.
But I'd like to know a little bit who Cider Planet was written for. Is it for the cider curious? Is it for makers, commercial or amateur? Because this book is a big departure from my sense of what the new Cider Maker Handbook was for. So could you speak to that?
Yes, sure. Well, being myself a cider maker, naturally, I firstly write for the cider makers. They may be hobbyist or commercial, but I understand the needs and the important issues that this group of people is facing. So this is really my first audience. However, in Cider Planet, I've also written on a number of topics which aren't directly related to the making of the cider. For example, I'll describe some unique traditions in many regions, also some historical aspects. And these subjects may prove quite interesting and useful for other groups of people. These may include the sommeliers or pommeliers and other people who may serve cider to curious customers. This may be in a restaurant, in a bar, in a wine shop, or the tasting room of a cidery. Recently, one of my daughters was telling me she was in a bar when they served some cider. They had, I don't know, 5 or 6 different ciders on offer. And she asked the waiter about which one is dry, tannic. So, you know, some quite basic question that you can ask and that may help in picking a selection when you don't know what you're going to select. And the only answer she got was, well, that one is the one most people prefer, which wasn't very satisfying as an answer. So there is a need for a better general education in the cider domain. And I hope this book can be of interest for these people. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I really hope that this book may become an important reference for the Pomelier certification. And well, finally, I hope this book may appeal to some serious drinkers who are interested to know a little more about the drink, the cider that they enjoy drinking.
You do that full cultural and historical piece, which I always really enjoy and is a big part of what I do here on Cider Chat. So bravo for that. And in terms of the cider curious, the cider fans and drinkers, that will really pull them in. I mean, who wouldn't want to travel to the UK and experience a cider after you've written about it and offered us now some of these apples, you know, to consider, or the uniqueness of Dom Fronte and the different regions of France. So it's really lovely. And of course, also Kazakhstan, which you were able to travel with a group of folks and visit the folks who are now running Apple City Cider in Kazakhstan. That was quite a journey.
Oh, yes, that was an extraordinary trip. Yes, really fantastic.
One of the things I noticed, I did watch that movie, which is going to be released as in a shorter compilation of like 1 hour coming out. I noticed that at one point you were at the oldest tree in the world that we know of, right, in the Tenshan Mountains there. And you had said that you weren't too interested in seeing the tree, that they kind of misinterpreted what you were there for, that you had a different plan. And that kind of surprised me because I'm really fond of trees and really old trees. And I thought, well, shoot, I'd love to see the oldest tree in the world. But I wonder, in that time that you were there and now reading your book, I got a different sense of who Claude was. I felt that there was a certain, the new Cider Maker's Handbook is very scientific. It's kind of like the, you know, a Bible to like cider making in a way that you really have to like dig into deeply. But this one, it has a softer tone to it. And it seemed as if there was a bit of a change in your, if I could say, perhaps your personality or approach to cider and delivering that message. Is that a true interpretation of what I'm sensing there, or am I speaking a little off?
Well, not really. You see, in the new Cider Makers Handbook, I mostly wrote about how I make my cider and what I think is the best way to make a great cider. So, yes, it's a lot more technical, scientific. It's based on enology principles. There's a lot of mathematical formulas. It is also quite personal and centered around my own experimentation and results in making cider. Cider Planet is very different because really I step out and let great cider makers from all over the world to tell you, to tell us, how they make their ciders and pairs. So really, in Cider Planet, I am more like a transmission belt to convey the knowledge and experience of these makers to the reader. So the perspective, as you see, is completely different.
Let's go on with how the book was laid out, just kind of the plan of action within the book. How did you approach the cider planet? Because that's a pretty big undertaking, taking on the whole planet.
Yes, but it has to be laid out by region. So there are three important parts of it. In the first part, I cover the traditional cider-making regions of Europe, which we talked already about a little bit in the beginning of this talk. These are in the United Kingdom, in France, in Spain, and Germany. So in these four countries, we do find the oldest cider poles. In fact, these are really the cradles of cider-making. So there's a chapter for each of these countries. And in each of these chapters, I will review the history of cider evolution, explore the traditions, have a look at the important literature, and meet some good producers. We have a study of the pomology, the apple varieties, the pomage, and the blends, and take a close look at how the cider is produced. So every chapter is sort of constructed in a similar fashion to cover these points. So we have these four chapters in the first part. Then the second part is very similar, but it's for the three important berry producing regions, which are in the UK, in France, in Austria. So in the UK, we'll have the Herefordshire Perry. In France, we have the Poiré d'Enfantais. And in Austria, we have the Birnenmost from Mostviertel. So again, these three chapters are constructed a bit the same way than in the first part, except that they apply to perry instead of cider. And the third part is for new and emerging cider-making regions. And these may be in other European countries, such as Baltic or Scandinavia, maybe in Americas, North America, South America, there's also a lot, Australia, New Zealand, even in Asia and South Africa. So in this third part, I'll look at, not as deeply, but I'll look at the cider scene, how it is evolving, and how some of these regions are now becoming major players on the world scene, mainly North America and Australia, but becoming more and more important on the world scene. So that's the basic layout of the book, really region by region, and looking at what's happening in each of those regions.
Mm-hmm. I appreciated that you also included a little bit on quince, what I would call medlars, and also sorbus domestica.
This is essentially in the chapter on Germany, because it's part of a traditional there to use those fruit mixed with apples.
I was kind of curious if there is a key region that is propelling cider forward on the cider planet, Or do you see it as a combination of regions?
It's my personal opinion, but I don't think there's a key region. I find that the movement is global, worldwide, and covers all regions where the apple tree grows well. In fact, if you look at the last chapter of my book, craft cider is booming all around the planet. So really, I see this as a global boom. Everywhere it's booming. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't put one region forward for this movement.
Mm. Well, that's a good way to approach it. We want to keep everyone happy out there who's listening, and they are listening from around the world, of course. And we have also cider in Japan, you know, and Asia. I mean, it's just incredible. India. These are regions, yeah, you know, that people don't realize that there's quite large apple growing regions there. So it just mm-hmm. makes sense that there's going to be cider coming out of there. Although, as you mentioned, in Kazakhstan, there wasn't really any kind of cider making history. Or even in Russia, it appears that that's really starting to boom now, but there wasn't really any past history in cider making from what I could tell from the different makers I've talked to.
It's surprising because mm-hmm. Russia has a huge apple production, but I think they're too much on vodka, so they never bothered making cider.
Yeah, yeah. Or even Italy, right? You mentioned Italy and Mali.
Italy. I have a very good friend in Italy, which is the owner of the Mali cider. That's in the mountains near the border of France and Switzerland. So he grows apples in high altitude. And he makes fantastic cider, but he was telling me that Mussolini really banned cider. He had decided that wine had to be the drink in Italy. There's more and more cideries in Italy now. It's really booming there also.
Mm-hmm. Well, that seems to be a common thread in many countries where the government did something, like in Canada, or even in the U.S., where they were taking down orchards or, you know, stopping local cider makers. Pretty common, unfortunately. We're all kind of playing catch up at the same time, I suppose.
Yeah.
I was wondering, you are Canadian, you live in Quebec City. What is it like in your own country now? What kind of pace do you see happening for Canada?
In Quebec, for sure, is probably the leading province in the country at the moment. And it's certainly the place where it first started. I mean, 20 years ago, there were almost as many cideries in the province of Quebec, which is 8 million people, as there were in the whole of the United States. Just to give you an idea of relative importance. However, since then, the U.S. have picked up. You can't deny that.
Mm-hmm.
So Quebec was really a precursor on this in North America. But in the beginning, in Quebec, cider was mostly made by apple producers and not by cider makers. They were really apple producers who search for a way to use their surplus apple or second grade apples. It's only more recently, that we have younger cider makers in Quebec that are real cider makers. And Marc-Antoine of Ciderie Milton that you talked about is one of them. And there are quite a few others that are really thinking in terms of cider and not thinking in terms of only using their surplus apples. Mm-hmm. And this changes a lot of the quality of the ciders that are produced. So we're getting now getting lot more high quality ciders than we used to 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So this is good, really. This is very good.
Yes.
The other, Ontario is doing fine also. I've been a few times in Ontario, and they picked up much later than Quebec. They started really by 2010. I'd say Quebec was the first, and the U.S. picked up, and then the Ontario picked up a bit with the U.S. And they're doing nice things in Ontario also. Also, there is a lot of industrial cider, which is not as nice, but there's quite a bit of nice craft cider also. And also in the east, in the Atlantic province, yeah, it's coming everywhere.
What was your hope for readers to take away from this book? You know, that's a kind of a big question. I imagine it's something that you're thinking about quite a bit while you're writing this. What is the goal of my book? Where am I taking people? And it is a unique book because you, as you mentioned earlier, you really, you know, think in mind or in the mind of a cider maker, but also the folks who like that historical cultural piece. What was your hope that they would actually take away from the book?
When I write, I have the habit of addressing to the intelligence of people. I want people to understand things. I will never give just a plain recipe. And I did the same when I wrote the New Cider Maker's Handbook. And this is one of the aspects that was really liked by people. Although it was criticized by others, some other people would have preferred to have just recipes, but it's not what I write. So I like my readers to understand the concepts that I bring, that I write about. So really, I'd like my readers to get a good understanding of the traditional styles of cider and of pear. What makes the traditional cider from the West Country of England different from a German Apfelwein or French cidre or an Asturian cidre or a Basque Sagarlo. So one needs to understand why these products are so different. And they're much more different, really, than wines, you know. It's not so easy to make the difference between a Bordeaux wine, a Bourgogne wine, Italian wine from Chianti, Spanish wine for Rioja. I think the wines have gone through a sort of homogenization, and they're starting to be more and more all alike. In cider, we have a chance that all these products are fundamentally different one from the other. And I think the drinker, the cider maker, the pommelier needs to understand what makes a difference between those products. And similarly for the pears, how a Poiré d'Enfanté is very different from a Herefordshire pear, or a Birnenmosch from Moschwirtel. So you have to understand why these are different from how they're made, the fruit that are used to make them, and the cider making practice that are used in making. I would also like the readers to catch difference between some important concepts. For example, what's the difference between an industrial cider and a craft cider? Very important question. What's the difference between a modern style cider and a traditional style cider? It's another very important question. Mm-hmm. And the difference between modern and traditional cider making practices. What I mean by cider making practices is the methods that are used to make the cider. So these practices are really important. Some producers use more modern practices, while other producers use more traditional practices. And these practices will have an influence on the style of sun. We can see, for example, that the traditional practices represent the way cider was made 100 years ago, while the modern practices have mostly been developed during the last 50 years, often in the wine industry, and then adapted to cider making. So these different practices will have an influence on the style of the cider, on its flavor also. So it's important to understand this. And I guess these are the main points that I'd like the reader to take away from the book, this understanding of these fundamental subjects.
So when they go into a restaurant and they ask the barkeep or, you know, the sommelier or anyone there serving them about the different varieties of ciders, they're going to hear more than, well, that's the most popular one there, and they'll understand.
Right. Or maybe the drinkers will start really asking complex questions. Is this a modern style or a traditional style cider?
That would be wonderful.
And then the waiter will have to know which answer to give, because if you just say, well, I don't know, the reader, well, you need to buy Cider Planet, then you can answer me.
There you go. It should be in every cidery tasting room and all the bars that have a tap or bottles on hand for sure, as a good reference for both the workers and the patrons. Well, this is absolutely delightful. I wanted to ask you one more question here. And this is a personal question. I know this could be difficult to answer, but look, Claude, you've written a number of books on the topic. So I wonder, is there a particular favorite style of cider that you have and what that might be?
A favorite?
Yeah.
You know, I have three daughters. I love them, all of them. Yeah. Would you ask me which one I love most?
No.
Same difference.
Well said. That's probably one of the best answers I've ever heard to what's your favorite style of cider. Yeah, yeah.
So the idea is to learn to appreciate all of these styles, and they're all represent something fundamental from the people who make them. And they're all great.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. They definitely are. And I typically answer that same question myself. My most favorite cider is the next one in my glass. you know, because you don't know what is next going to be approaching you. And it's just such a wide, wide world out there. Or as you well put it, Cider Planet. I'm wondering, Claude, what's next for you? You're working in the orchard a lot, looking for different varieties that are really working well. You have now authored three books. What can we expect from Claude Jacquelaire moving forward?
Oh, my God.
Is that too big of a question?
Nothing, really.
Oh, no. I don't believe that.
My main center of interest at the moment is to discover, test, and evaluate native cider apples for my region. So here in Charlevoix County, I have the chance of having 20 minutes from here a wild apple forest. There are there on that piece of land between 1,000 and 1,500 wild apple trees that were planted or seeded by bears that came in an ancient orchard, eat the apples. And in going back in the mountain, they just left their droppings and apple trees grew from there. It's a small apple forests like those that I've seen in Kazakhstan, but it's not so different. Hmm. It's extraordinary, the material there is there. At the moment, I have 18 varieties under observation. I've grafted a number in my orchard and evaluating how the trees were growing. So this keeps me quite busy. Hmm. And apart from those, in my immediate surroundings here, there are 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 nice cider apple that I have named, and then I'm still evaluating. They're considered as experimental still, but most of them are maybe available from some specialized nurseries. And we always discover some more. So I do believe that the future of cider making in North America is related to local seedling varieties that we'll discover, but some we have already discovered and new ones that we will discover in all regions. Because, yes, we can plant some French and some English cider apples. We can plant some Dabinet, some Arlington Mill, some Muscadet de Dieppe, some Kerberien. Fine, they'll grow. But they'll never be well adapted like the natural seedling that has come from your region. Mm-hmm. So I believe the future is with those natural seedlings. The other reason is that when we make our ciders in North America, we don't necessarily want to make an imitation of the French or the English cider or Spanish cider. I think this is a bit pointless. I think we have to discover our style, which will be our own style, different from the other region's style. And for this, we need to have our own apples, which have a different flavor and which will impart some local character to this cider. So I'm working a lot on that aspect of cider making. Last fall, I was invited in Gaspésie. I don't know if you know the region of Gaspésie in Quebec.
I do not know.
It's really the east, southeast part, completely on the east of the province. It's sort of a peninsula. And there's a group of cider makers there that are working a lot with wild seedlings of the region and invited me to get some help on how to evaluate them. And so I gave them some tips and pointers. This one is better because of that reason, and so on. And eventually, I'd like to see these people develop a sort of DOP or IGP for Cidre de la Baie des Chaleurs or Cidre de Gaspésie, which would have its distinct particularity due to the wild apple trees that grow in that region. Mm-hmm. So this is really that where I am the most of these days. Maybe one day I'll write a book on this. I'm not there yet. Mm. Like when I wrote the new Cider Maker's Handbook, I had no idea I'd be writing Cider Planet 8 years later. Mm.
Well, here you are, and you did such a nice job. Well, look, I really want to thank you for taking the time today and also bringing us forward out into the world, out on to our own planet, and offering this treasure of a book for readers far and wide, both commercial makers, amateur makers, and just the folks who just love apples, orchards, and cider. Thank you so much for being part of this episode and taking time with Cider Chat.
It was a pleasure. Thank you to you. Hopefully we'll see one another soon again.
That was Claude Jalicoeur, the author of Cider Planet. In the show notes for this year's episode, you'll be able to find links to be able to order that book online. And you'll also be able to find a link to a past episode recording with Claude, where he was talking about his trip to Kazakhstan. That's episode 153, titled Journey to the World's Largest Apple Tree. It was actually recorded at Cider Days. He was doing a presentation at Cider Days a number of years back now, and it's really informative. So I think you would want to check that out. You can find it all at ciderchat.com. And though I may eat my words, I do have a sense that we might be seeing Claude Jalicoeur this way come that first weekend of November. And I bet he might have his book, Cider Planet, in hand. And how cool would that be to meet this author who has written so many fine cider books at this point and getting a signed copy? Meeting the dude himself. All right. Good stuff. Which allows me to remind you that if you want to stay up to date on Cider Days 2.0 with ticket releases, so you don't have to be writing this all down while you're listening to the podcast and stopping on the side of the road and say, oh, I got to get this down now. First of all you have to do is check out ilovesaturdays.com, and you'll find the webpage, and you're going to find the events and the tickets there. And you'll also find on the sidebar a little button to hit subscribe to eCider News. And that will get to your inbox when ticket releases go live. In fact, folks who signed up for eCider News right before the Calvados and American Apple Brandy tasting tickets went live got a little promo code. So you never know what little kind of like Easter egg's going to come in to your mailbox when you sign up. You know, if you haven't guessed by now, I like to have fun. And with that, I leave you here. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Strange apples, bitter sharp. Strange apples, juicy and ripe. Who wants a tannin balm?
I want a tannin balm.
Who wants to pull them down?
I'm gonna pull them down. Hey, 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 apples, bittersweet.
Strange apples,
hanging high.
Got them strange apples.
Forget the pie.
Strange apples.
Squeeze them tight.
Got them strange apples.
Strange apples. Strange apples. Make them pop.
I want a tannin balm.
Who wants to pull them down?
I'm gonna pull them down. Hey, 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 apples.
Come and see. Plenty strange apples for you and me. Strange apples. Strange apples. Apples, make them pop.
Pop, pop, pop.
Ba-da, doo-doo-da. Pop, pop, pop. Ba-da, doo-doo-da. Pop.